Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. Well, we've had our detailed discussion of some of the more intimate aspects of the female anatomy. What next? I don't know. Birds? Yeah, that's as good an idea as any. Rich Guthrie is back to talk about birds today on Vox Pop, and he's an expert on such things. This is the sort of varied and eclectic programming choices you get from hour to hour in public radio. You only get it here. So if you want to talk about birds now, well, by all means, 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, it's birds. 800-348-2551. Richard P. Guthrie is here. We'll be back with your calls after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We're discussing birds today, and when we do that, we welcome back avian expert Rich Guthrie to answer your questions. Rich is retired from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. He is a board member of the State Ornithological Association and the regional reviewer for the premier birding site eBird. If you have a question about birds, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 is the number. You can tweet us at WAMC Vox Pop or email voxpop@wamc.org. But again, our number is 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, welcome back, sir.
Hey, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Very nice to have you here. We'll start with we've had a few emails come in here.
Oh.
Prior to you being on the air.
Oh, my gosh.
Including one with a picture. This one is from Dee in New Windsor. With the devastating effects of Hurricane Dorian on the Bahamas, do we know yet how that will impact the Kirtland's warblers, which overwinter there?
We do not, and that's a huge concern, not only for the Kirtland's warbler, which, by the way, is an endangered species. It has a very limited range. It nests in central Michigan for the most part and winters in the Bahamas for the most part.
Okay.
And their winter habitat is critical to their survival.
Right.
As well as for many other Caribbean birds that are found on the Bahamas. I would suggest that some of those birds may have actually lost the critical habitat that they require either on Abaco Island or Grand Bahama Island.
And there are no other islands on a similar latitude that may be suitable?
There are. They could go to further south onto Long Island or some of the other Bahamian islands.
Yeah.
And they may not have arrived there just yet.
Okay.
So there is... You know, these birds have dealt with this in the millennia prior, and but some of the ones that are stuck on the Bahamas that don't migrate to there, that weren't away during these storms, maybe the ones that were more critically impacted.
This one is from David. And David writes, a friend of mine found this feather on her porch and asked if I could ID it. I've never seen one like it. Any idea what it is? There's a picture here, a black and orange feather. You can see it in relation to the size of the dime. If you're listening at home, you're out of luck, but yeah. We'll describe.
And this is a black and white photograph, a close-up photograph.
Well, it's black and orange, according to the note from our producer.
And I'm going to suggest it came from one of the gallinaceous birds, either a rough grouse or perhaps Windsor, Connecticut, perhaps a turkey poult. A young turkey.
Okay.
But that's just a wild guess. And I'm glad I didn't use a scientific term for that.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you for the email. Rich Guthrie is our guest. 800-348-2551, the phone number. We'll start it out with John. We'll start it out with John in Shelburne. Hello, you're on.
Hello. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
There was a bird on my porch yesterday. Or next to my porch, rather, that we've never seen around here before. It's yellow breast, bright red hood, and really and black mask around its eyes, and really bright colors. Maybe it was the day, but any idea what that would be?
Roughly what size? How big was it compared to, let's say, a robin or a sparrow or a crow?
Robin, more the size of a little bigger than a finch.
Aha. Okay. Right down the alley of a house finch, I'm going to suggest. There are some color variants in the house finch population that might show that yellow pattern.
So yellow belly, red tail, and black mask. Is that what we're talking about here?
Red
hood.
Red hood. And again, there are some color variations in the house finch. Given that size, the other possibility would be one of the warbler species that has a very thin bill. And
yes,
I would need a little more information going towards the warbler corner of the spectrum.
Well, what more would you need?
The shape of the bill, what it was doing. Was it, you know, was it actually chasing after insects in the tree or feeding on seeds?
No, it was just rest. It looked like it was just resting there for a little bit, and the bill, longish, I guess you would say. I don't know.
Okay, well, not enough information for me to really grasp the possibilities.
Okay.
There's a full range of, you know, some of my friends out there who may be listening are yelling into the phone, into the radio right now, trying to tell me exactly what it is.
And what is it?
But that's a good question.
Okay.
Well, and we're going to work on that.
All right, John, if you by any chance see this bird again and you can snap a picture, Richard has an email address, and it is?
RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com, and P as in Peter. RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com. And and drop me a note, and if you think of any other further notes, whether the bird had any kind of spotting or streaks or bars or any of those patterns that may be there.
No, it didn't have anything like that. It was pretty solid color.
Solid color.
And it was just a beautiful bird. That's why
it just
stood out.
I can imagine. Well, given the weather, it might still be around. Birds are migrating now, but when you have some foul weather like we've been having, they might stick around for a few days and wait for better conditions.
Is it possible this is a real outlier, one that got lost?
Oh, yeah. So anything's possible, and that's what we're always looking for. And there are some really unexpected birds that might fit that pattern. So drop me a note with any further notes that you might have on that at my email address, and we'll give it some fine thought.
Okay, and thanks, John. And then you, Rich, will take us back to this moment on the next show and tell us what you found, right?
Yes, please remind me.
Oh, that's not going to work. You'll have to remind yourself. All right, let's go to Jeff in Claverick. Jeff, you're on.
Hi. I have a simple question. I've been feeding birds, large numbers of birds, year-round for the last 20 years, all kinds of birds. They're always lined up in the trees, all up and down the driveway, waiting to get to the feeders. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, there was a big storm that came through. I noticed the next day, very high winds, heavy rains. I noticed the next day I didn't see any birds. Since then, I haven't seen a bird.
Huh.
Well, rest assured, little, if anything, happened to the birds. I'm going to suggest perhaps it was a flock of birds that migrated away, you know, such as the blackbirds or, you know, a combination of different birds that have decided it's time to go south.
Yeah.
And
this is on a daily basis. I see 12 or 15 different kinds of birds on the feeders.
Yes. Well, the birds are still coming to my feeders, the same bunch, the blue jays, the cardinals, the nuthatches, chickadees, titmice, and house finches and the like. So I'm going to suggest it was probably maybe some local condition that moved them on, or like I say, the summer crowd has left and the winter crowd is yet to arrive.
Could there be a predator floating around nearby?
There could be, but you know what? They work around that. You know, hawks or foxes will find a lunch. The birds recognize that, and they'll go back to their normal casual business.
Right.
There seems to be a sense that when the predator is on the prowl, the birds are alarmed and they are more cautious and will stay more concealed or out of the way. But then back to normal, business as usual. So I would suggest that it's either one of those two things.
Don't panic.
Don't panic, Jeff.
All right, Jeff, thanks for the call. We'll take a quick break. Rich Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we will be right back. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Richard P. Guthrie is our guest. It's Birds Today on the program. You got a list of things.
Sure. Things are happening. Folks, you know that.
You sound very excited about it.
Well, now's the time.
Let's just idle back a little bit.
Okay.
This
here
is
we
public
go.
Radio.
Right now, there's lots going on out there. The bird clubs are active in their field trips and program autumn programs. So let's go down with a few of them at the moment.
10-4.
Okay. The Hudson Mohawk Bird Club, for example, is having their monthly program this Monday, October 7th. And it's about birds in northern India. That's at the Bach Community Firehouse in Cohoes, New York.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's the Hudson Mohawk Bird Club at hmbc.net. Then they have a field trip on the 13th, and that's to Five Rivers Environmental Education Center in Delmar, New York, my favorite places go to. Further south in Orange County, New York, the Mearns Bird Club is going to be going on the 5th of October to 6.5 Station Road. That's a popular spot for migrating birds and a very popular field trip to go on.
Why do they call it 6.5 Station? Is there a 7?
Probably. It's just a half mile down the road.
Ah, I gotcha. Okay.
And then on October 6th, that's a Sunday, everybody's invited to go to the Storm King Art Center for a field trip in Cornwall, New York. And that's at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
Admission is free, and you get in there to see not only the birds, but the art that the birds are liking,
sure.
too. The Waterman Bird Club in Dutchess County, New York, on Sunday the 6th is going to Buttercup Sanctuary. You got to check in advance. You got to let them know you're coming. That's at the watermanbirdclub.org.
Right.
Wednesday the 9th, they're going to Stony Kill Farm in Wappinges, New York. And then on Saturday the 12th, Vassar Farm. That's for sparrows and other migrant birds. Again, let them know in advance. watermanbirdclub.org.
All right.
One word. Over in the Hoffman Bird Club in Massachusetts, on Sunday the 6th, they're going to Stafford Hill in Cheshire at 7 in the morning. And that's a half-day trip, again, for migrating birds. Birds are migrating now. So we have this whole wave of birds coming in from the north
through.
A parade. And then their monthly meeting is on Monday the 7th, and that's Foresters for the Birds. Realizing Habitat and Broader Conservation Goals. That's the Hoffman Bird Club at hoffmanbirdclub.org for details on that.
Splendid.
The 13th is Sunday. They're going to have a leader's choice. Now, that's going to be the last-minute decision so that they can pick the best of what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the Hoffman Bird Club. Delaware Otsego Audubon that are going to have an open house at their Hawk Watch. Saturday, October 5th, and that's DOAS.us is their website, Delaware Otsego Audubon, DOAS.us. And they're also having their ongoing bird seed sales to help benefit the birds and the Audubon chapter.
Sure.
A couple more. The Hudson River Audubon Society, HRAS, is having a Hawk Day on Saturday the 5th, down at Lenoir Nature Preserve in Yonkers, New York. There's going to be a hawk watch all day long, from and then live hawks at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh.
Meet the hawks and enjoy the birds going overhead. And on the 19th, another hawk watch, again, at the Lenoir Preserve.
Hmm.
And finally, we have the Bedford Audubon. Now through November 25th, they're doing a Chestnut Ridge Hawk Watch. There's a theme here.
Right.
The hawks are moving through,
right.
And they're great to, if you know a good spot to find them. That's going to be at the Arthur Butler Sanctuary in Bedford, New York, bedfordaudubon.org. Audubon Society of the Capital District is going to have a bird walk at Tivoli Lake Preserve in Albany, New York, on Saturday the 5th at 9 a.m. And then on the 26th, there's a bird talk, Birds, Insects, and Their Urban Environments. And that's at the People Island State Park on aerial insectivorous birds. That's bug-eating birds that fly.
Are you doing that one?
I am not. Okay. That's at capitalregionaudubon.org.
That's a long list, Rich.
I know, but it's Show's that time of over. Year. We got to make up for all that slack time during the summer.
Hey, I had a discussion with Lucas Willard in the newsroom earlier today. When did the dodo go extinct?
Back in way early. I mean, it was probably around the 1700s,
yeah.
Thereabouts.
He was Lucas was mentioning that there's actually writings about how they tasted.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure sailors at the Mauritius Islands and where the dodo was found, it was a flightless bird, a big oversized pigeon that didn't fly. And for hungry sailors that have been eating nothing but stale food and anything live during that time, it was probably tasty.
Okay. Well, I don't know why I brought that up, but I thought it was interesting, and obviously I was wrong. This is from Andy in Canajoharie. I have a question about a bird I observed while making hay this week. It was obviously a raptor, same size as a red-tailed hawk, smaller than an eagle. It was dark brown, black in color, with a white stripe on its tail feathers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
A very good description of the Northern Harrier.
Ah.
The Northern Harrier gets its name because what they do is they fly back and forth over open fields and like to follow hay wagons because their main food is mice and voles and even some insects.
Mm.
So the Northern Harrier is a bird of that ilk.
Okay. It's time to play America's favorite game show, Name That Bird. We haven't done this in a while.
Okay.
Are you ready? Now, Anne sent in a recording of this unidentified bird. We'll play it for you. I'll play it again if you're confused, and then we'll see if you can identify it and win valuable prizes. You ready, Maestro? Here we go.
Ooh.
Oh, it's a 73 Volvo. Here, let's hear that one more time.
Wonderful. Okay, very faint song. I hope that people out there were able to hear that.
Yeah.
But in the background there was the beautiful song of the Prairie Warbler.
Is that your final answer?
That's the answer.
Let's check with our judges. And yes, they will accept it. Good. Congratulations, Rich.
We just won that prize.
You win the home version of Vox Pop.
The Prairie Warbler. Actually, that was probably taken earlier in the season.
Really?
But they're a very colorful, delightful little songbird. Bright yellow underneath with this pattern of stripes on both the mask and the face and down the sides.
Mm, okay.
And the name is a bit of a misnomer. They like mixed open areas, fields with some intermediate tree growth or shrubs in there.
Well, how did they get the name Prairie Warbler then?
Well, you know, we have a lot of misnamed birds out there. Palm Warbler. I mean, they're very seldom found in palms, but they nest up in the muskegs of Canada.
Well, there you go.
You know, where they might even find snow on the ground during the nesting season.
All right, fair enough. That was fun. Back to the phones we go, and Gene in West Dakota. Gene, you're on.
Oh, hi. All right. My question is, I was looking outside the other day, and there was a flock of birds, either purple martins or starlings, in the trees and flying all around like you see at this time of year sometimes. And when I saw the birds fly, they all had the same, they were relatively small, dark, and they had kind of a split tail. But every once in a while, amongst those birds, same size, same tail, but ones with one long feather between those tail feathers. That was very noticeable. And I wondered what that bird was. Was it the same bird? I haven't been able to find out.
Hmm.
Well, what happened was you had a marauding flock of grackles hit your yard.
Ah, the grackles.
The grackles. And they do have a long tail that is actually has a long central tail pattern. And dragging behind them, it looks like a very long tail for sure for the size of the bird, and then also the extended middle feathers may look like one long feather, and then some of the grackles may still be going through their annual molt, which will mean that some of the feathers aren't fully grown, so the central feathers may be longer than the outlying feathers. But
so whole flock grackles?
Yeah, probably. Well, they fly in mixed groups. But they can have an entire flock of grackles themselves, but other birds mixed in with them might be red-winged blackbirds or cowbirds or even starlings.
Hmm, okay.
So are those the same birds that do murmuration? Because that's what it was like, this huge flock.
Well, they do that, yes.
They do what?
This is a phenomenal scene in nature.
Yeah.
And this is where a large flock in the form of a cloud will do syncopectic maneuvers in the air.
Ah.
So that they look like an aerial ballet.
Yeah.
Where a wave of birds will turn in sequence and then turn again.
And so how do they do that?
It's a good question. They do it on instant motion recognition. And then it moves through the flock so that it's sometimes all at once and sometimes in waves and sometimes it creates these beautiful pattern as an aerial display. And basically what that is to distract a predator, a hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's actually, and it's the starling that's best known for doing that when they get into a large flock like that, maybe
okay.
a couple of thousand birds, spectacular to it. Sandpipers do the same thing and what's interesting with them is that they're dark above and white beneath, and when they flip and turn like that, they go from dark to white to dark to white. Looks like semaphore out there.
Well, Gene, thank you very much for the call. And now to Rex in Pittsfield, you're on. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Hey, Rex.
I have a question. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
Great.
Great.
I have a question about pigeons.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning, about the break of day, when the sun starts coming up, a flock of pigeons will land across the street from my house in there's a little area with a whole bunch of pebbles.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they're recharging their gizzard so they can eat for the day.
That's it, yep.
But what I'm wondering about is, do pigeons, once they find a sweet spot, do they keep coming back?
Yes.
I mean, will they remember where that good gravel is, and will they keep coming back?
Yes, unless they find a better one along the way, unless something happens to the one that they had targeted. And birds will follow a pattern like that through the day. Many birds will. Some of them are stick tights and will not move. But many birds have a routine where they get up in the morning, they go stop by the coffee shop, then they head down the road and hit the bagel shop, then they go down the road and get the lunch stop, and then further on they'll get the tea stop.
Which birds eat the bagels mainly?
Bagels.
Yeah. Oh, hey, that's a good. I'm sorry I asked. All right.
Oh yeah. Dun-dun-dun.
Yeah.
All right. No, I was just curious about that. I see them every morning, and you know, obviously I can't tell if it's the same birds, but it just seemed weird that it was every single morning the pigeons would land there and do their thing. And you wouldn't see them for the rest of the day.
And that's true. I see the same thing. The blue jays around my house, usually not there first thing in the morning, but then come around 10 o'clock, there they are, all 8, 10, 12, 15, 30. Nah, just kidding. Yeah. Just two or three of them.
All right, Rex, thanks a lot for the call. Now, you know, they eat the stones. They're in the lineage of the dinosaurs, and I know that some of the dinosaurs would eat stones to help. Why do they eat the stones?
Just to aid digestion. They're seed-eating birds, especially the ones that eat seeds. And they, in the gizzard, they use the stones to crush the shell of the seeds. And then they get right through to the kernel.
Very, very interesting. Fred and Kerhonkson. Fred, you're on.
Tools of nature.
Howdy.
Hey.
Howdy.
First question is, it's been a while. I've been wanting to ask you guys about this. Did you ever resolve the problem with Heckel and Jekyll and what kind of birds they were?
Yeah, we did. And I
thanks for bringing that up.
No, that's not a problem. I stand corrected.
Paul Terry, a Terry Tunes, man.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Magpies.
Yeah, I got a lesson out of that one, and that was good. Thanks.
Okay, and did you have another question?
All right, two quick observations of mine before the question. I actually saw two eagles with talons locked falling from the sky outside of Slate Hill by the fire tower outside of Mazama, Washington, which was awesome. And I also watched a barred owl one day out my kitchen window do, like, lunch and just flew down into 10 inches of snow and got – it just ate everything right up. It was really cool. All right. The question is, Halloween morning, 2017, there was a bald eagle, we're talking about between Kerhonkson and Accord, in a field eating carrion, and there was a circle of a murder of crows, probably 30 to 40 of them,
mm-hmm.
in a circle about 50 feet in diameter. They were all jumping up and down, and not a sound was happening. What was going on?
Hmm. They were standing in line, waiting for the waiting for the table pickings.
And the eagle didn't mind?
Eagles had no choice.
Oh, the eagle just stayed right there and just kept on eating. Yeah. It was really, you know, I had like 4 or 5 minutes of watching this thing.
Yeah,
it was
eagles,
really cool.
Yeah, a smart eagle wouldn't bother with them. And it's really funny. I've watched actually on occasion where the crows will actually go up and pinch the eagle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, grab its tail. I mean, they
right,
get impatient.
There was just so many. It was a big circle. It was like a graphic, man. It was really cool.
Oh,
and anybody around here I've talked to, nobody's ever seen anything like it.
Yeah, well, they'll do that. And, impatiently waiting for the eagle to get up and...
Makes sense.
Like jackals at the zebra kill.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Fred. Why do they call them a murder of crows?
I don't know. You know, and I'll be honest with you. Some of these collective nouns are made up. I mean,
that goes way back. A murder of crows goes way. I mean, is there a manslaughter of robins?
Not at all. No? I think it's a raven is a large crow, and the lure, the legend, and the story behind crows and ravens and stuff and the like. I think there's people interpret ominous signs to a bunch of them.
And did they ever bake 4 and 20 blackbirds into a pie?
More than likely, yes.
Yeah. For entertainment purposes,
back in the old days, that was lunch. That was dinner.
Okay. Let's go to Annie in Greenwich. Annie, you're on.
Hi, Ray and Rich. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Rich, I'm having trouble with I think it's a Cooper's hawk.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's hawk trapping season now, and it's already killed one of my chickens, although it didn't do anything after killing it. And it came in the other day, not 10 feet from me, and tried to grab another one of my chickens. So I was hoping you could help me get a name of someone that can come and trap this thing.
Well, that's probably not going to happen. I think that the birds, the banders who do that sort of thing, are really, right now they're busy tracking the migrating hawks that are going around. I don't know that any. First of all, there are few and far between that are licensed to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And again, they're up there on the hawk ridges and the like, working on their research projects. I would suggest that keeping the chickens in until the hawk gives up and moves on is going to look for another place to find a
meal. Is there any way that Annie could deter this hawk?
Keeping the chickens in. I mean, it's only natural that you're going to see easy pickings like a chicken out there in the open. And chickens, sometimes they're clever and sometimes they just don't get it. and the hawk.
Are they smart chickens, Annie, by any chance?
Well, a couple are the ones that are still alive, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. But I would suggest if you can just keep them in. You know, they're not going to be happy about it, but for a few days, and then the good chance that the Cooper's hawk will move on and look for better pickings someplace down the road.
That's tough for free range, though. Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's a tough dilemma, right?
I know, and it's not only the hawk. I mean, there are other hazards out there. Between a fox and a coyote and other predators.
We have them too, but I see them coming. The hawk was just totally out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's how.
So you think just a few days will do it?
I'm hoping so, and because the hawk will get hungry. He's got to eat every day, and if he's not finding his regular pickup, then he's going to move on. And let's hope he finds a flock of pigeons someplace instead.
I hope so. All right. Thank you so much.
All right, Annie. I'm sorry I can't help you further on that.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie, our guest. 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Rich Guthrie is here. Rich, a board member of the State Ornithological Association, regional reviewer for eBird. How's eBird going?
eBird is terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, they keep making improvements and new things that you can, tools that you can utilize, like finding you can map a trip from here to Chicago with all the birding hotspots that you want to hit along the way. I mean, and then with a little graph or printout of what birds you might hope to find there.
Very interesting. What birds do you hope to find in Chicago?
Oh, all sorts of birds.
Blackhawks, right?
Yeah, blackhawks.
This one is from Karen. Karen writes, when can we put our bird feeder back up? We took it down for the summer because of bears.
Depends on where you are. What you got to do?
Doesn't say.
What you got to do is wait for the bears to head into the den, and that will depend on the weather out there. So, not until then. By the way, in some areas it's okay now.
Okay.
I mean, just because the bears are not there.
Right.
But if there are bears around and they find your feeder, then you know you got a wrecked feeder and a problem.
Right. This is from PJ in Clifton Park. I recently purchased a hummingbird feeder and was curious on the best months to put that out in our area. And that is, again, from PJ in Clifton Park.
October.
Really?
Ah. Thank you for bringing that up, because that's one of my pet topics. If you have a hummingbird feeder, one part sugar to four parts water, and keep it going. Most of our ruby-throated hummingbirds are gone. They're on their way to Mexico and beyond.
Right.
The other hummingbirds may be yet to arrive. And that's what, you know, as birders, we're always interested in finding. And we're learning that many of the western hummingbirds do actually come east before heading south. And so they arrive later, stay a little bit longer, and many of them, you know, they could use that extra nourishment to refuel along the way. So hummingbird feeders, there's no harm in leaving it up right through October and, in fact, into November.
Okay. This last email from Chaz, and then we'll be back to the phones. Chaz writes, we went to Block Island last weekend expecting a large number of migrating warblers but did not find them. Did we have the wrong week? I heard this was the week Audubon trips were scheduled.
Yeah, it's all about the weather. Right now we're in just the tail end of the peak of warbler and other small songbird migration.
Yeah.
And these birds migrate at night. And what's happening with places like Block Island and Fire Island and Nantucket and the like is that these birds, unfortunately, many of them, don't realize through the dark of the night that they're flying out over the ocean.
Yeah.
Which is, that can be a big problem. When the dawn comes, the daylight, and there's no land down there, they have to turn around and find someplace to come down. Oh. Offshore islands and barrier beaches are very important for this reason. Many birds just make it back, and the first thing they're looking for is rest and relaxation and then something to eat.
Right.
If there is a mass movement, if there's good weather that's prompting the birds to move during the night, a northwest wind, calm sky, bright moon, clear skies, what have you, there'll be a lot of birds that'll be flying. And that presumes that there will be a lot of birds on these islands, like Block Island.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not happening during the night, the birds that are on Block Island make their way back to the mainland, and continue their journey south, or are not moving from the mainland overnight. So the morning, there won't be so many birds there. But you get a good north breeze during the night, a northwest wind, there'll be potential for hordes of birds. That's why people go to places like that, because there's a huge concentration of migrants on these
islands.
But
again, Chaz just had some bad luck.
Yeah, it's all in the timing and the weather.
All right, back to the phones we go. Rich Guthrie is our guest. David in Grafton. David, you're on.
Howdy, Rich. Your appearances are always enlightening and very entertaining, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
Two quick questions and a related observation. By the way, maybe it was a disgruntled eagle that named crows a murder of crows. Who were interfering with his meal.
I don't blame him.
The main question is this. How many, and it would depend upon the species, but certainly with regard to robins, if not cardinals, how many broods will they put out in a season?
Good question. Some birds only one. Most birds only one. Some birds two, three. And I think three is probably maxing it out. And and the definition of a brood is whether or not it's successful or not. If it's a interrupted brood, destroyed nest or preyed upon eggs or young, they'll quickly recycle. If they're going to move through a full-fledging brood, a flock of young birds, that's going to take a lot longer, and they won't have so much time left. But I've seen birds feeding. In fact, cardinals in my yard are still feeding a couple of young birds.
Ah.
So that suggests...
Well, that brings me to the next question. I have seen in the past, robins feed their fledgling shortly after they left the nest. And about a week and a half ago, I'm looking out the window. I've had hundreds of birds come over the years and taken hundreds of pictures, but of course my camera was not at hand. Mm-hmm. And here were these young cardinals whose coloration was not well defined, but they were as large as the adults. And they had sufficient colorization for me to tell a male from a female. And the parents were feeding the babies, although, again, they were the same size, seeds from my bird feeder.
Hmm.
And I'd just never seen that before. I'd seen robins carry on like that, but never cardinals, which I get all year round. I think sometimes I wonder if it's not the same pair that comes back year after year. But what struck me was the size of these young birds that were being fed by their parents. Not natural food, but seeds from my hanging feeder, which, by the way, was visited after 20 years by a bear about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, no.
Ouch. Well,
he didn't destroy the feeder. He just bent the metal holder.
Well, you're lucky at that end. But and I would use some caution because they have a good memory and he may be back.
And then they will come back, yeah.
Yeah. So with regard to the cardinals, though, you know, it's a funny thing. They respond... in a funny way. They respond to any bird that looks like it's hungry and begging. Just the other day, I had a sparrow, a house sparrow, that was begging food from a cardinal at the bird feeder. And this particular cardinal just simply ignored it, kept on feeding. But
I have seen that before, where one species will feed another. And one more quick question. Have you ever seen a baby pigeon?
Oh, yeah, they're ugly.
That's a terrible thing
to say. I've never
seen
one. I've spent time in New York, and I used to see people who keep home pigeons in their roofs flying around, et cetera. And I stayed at a friend's place once, and we could hear them. But I've just never seen a young baby pigeon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they leave.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
I appreciate
a lot, Dave.
That.
I'm sure their mamas love them, but I'll tell you.
You know what, Richie? That's awful. You're an awful human being for saying that about the baby
pigeons.
The
ugly little baby pigeons?
Yes.
Yes,
oh,
right.
You know
well,
what?
They grow up. They're beautiful birds. I mean, it's the ugly duckling story. I mean, they have a winning end.
You're going to give them real attitude problems. Let's go to Bill in Half Moon. Bill, you're on.
Hi. Glad that you took my call.
Sure.
I've noticed at my feeder birds that have become bald.
Mm-hmm.
Not always the same variety. I've had a blue jay, a grackle, and I think a red-winged blackbird and stuff like that. I'm just wondering what the totally bald look like miniature vultures.
Yeah,
and then after a while the feathers grow back,
and that's natural. It's all part of the molt, and it happens as you mentioned with blue jays. And quite often with cardinals, it's a question of each year birds lose all their feathers and grow them back. Mostly, it's a sequential replacement.
Why do they do it?
But they need new feathers. Feathers, while remarkable as they are, wear out, and they need good sturdy feathers to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
So the cardinal and the jay and some of the other ones, as you mentioned, the grackle, will lose their feathers on the head all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them, not all of them. And it really makes them look strange.
they really look funny.
And... Yeah. they kind of draw some sympathy and as well as, you know, cruel laughter. But, and I'm sure they feel very awkward about it as much as they can because it's chilly. You know, that they just lost insulation.
Right.
It's sort of like
that's right.
Being out there without a hat.
When you worked for the Environmental Conservation Department, did you ever make little hats for some of these birds that are?
No. We left that up to their own. They have to evolve their own little hats.
All right, Bill, thanks for the call. Now over to Linda in Chatham. Linda, you're on.
Hey, Rich. I have a new call in the neighborhood. I wouldn't ordinarily call without an audio, but this is just a mid-range, very loud, one note, repetitive, over and over and over for a good couple of minutes.
Like what?
Can you make the sound, Linda?
Mm-hmm.
Just a single note.
It's a smoke detector.
smoke detector.
No?
I'm going to say that it's likely a young hawk. That is,
okay.
And they do that repetitively, but soon they will stop. That should be over. And
okay,
that's my first thought on that.
Could there be another option?
There could be. I'm thinking one of the songbirds, but you would know if it were one of the songbirds. You know, it had.
Yeah, it's not a call that I hear routinely.
Right. Yeah. So I'm going to suggest it was a young hawk and probably a red-shouldered hawk. But then, because they have the more musical of the notes, and the broad-winged hawk has a higher pitch and a squeaky note, and the red-tailed hawk is the. That's the sound that you hear in the background when they show you an eagle flying on TV ads.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Thanks, Linda. And now we go. Who's been waiting longest? Pat at Oneonta. Pat, you're on.
Oh, hello. Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you.
We live on a property that has tall trees, pine trees, and deciduous trees as well. We have many birds, and we've been here 21 years, and for the first time, I'm hearing an owl at night. And we heard it for about a week, steady, at dusk and through the night, and it would call very persistently. It would hoot, and now I still hear it, but I'm only hearing it occasionally. So I think he's still around, but I just wonder if I can identify what kind of an owl it is, since I've never heard an owl in 21 years. I have no clue.
Well, we have two hoot owls in the area, call them that, and one of them's the great horn, the other one is the barred owl, and they each have a distinctive call that they use. Now, what you have there is probably a young bird that has roaming around looking to establish a new territory, especially for the upcoming winter. And what he's doing or she is doing is calling out there to see, is this place taken? And, you know, may I? And then also, do we have any company out there want to spend the winter together? Yes, it's kind of like the dating scene.
Right.
And
yeah.
So the great horned owl has a call that goes like, hoo, 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 hoo. That's the great horned owl.
Okay.
And
okay.
The other, contain yourself, right?
That's fine.
Okay.
You sound like Barney Rubble, but continue.
And then the other one is the barred owl, which is even more fun. It goes like this. Ready?
Yes.
Hoo, 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 hoo. All right.
Check,
sit down.
Please.
Sit
I'm
down.
I've had it.
That's the barred owl.
It's not that.
Not that.
It's
a great horned owl.
Okay.
And then there's a third owl. And we really want to know about this. You want to, if this is the case, you want Delaware Otsego Audubon Society to know about this.
Okay, what is that?
That's the long-eared owl.
All right.
And they have a single hoot that goes like this. Ooh. And then a pause, and then a single hoot. Ooh. And then a pause, and another hoot, and then a pause. On, and they go on for a little while. And that's kind of like a drawn-out bark.
And that's a rarity?
It's hard to tell because they're very, very secretive, the long-eared owl. And they're just another bump in the night when you, unless you know what they are.
Yeah.
So easily overlooked.
This one has a longer first hoot, so if you don't mind my trying it here.
Oh, go ahead.
It's more. This one is more like hoo, 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 like that.
Well then, now we're gonna turn the page.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's the backing vocals for the Ike and Tina Turner, I think.
Well, I think that we're gonna have to consider Mourning Dove. In there.
Really?
Yeah, well, daytime or nighttime. If it's nighttime, go with the owls. If it's daytime,
It's nighttime.
Oh, it's nighttime.
It's nighttime.
Okay, well,
it's only at nighttime.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. All right, then.
So what do you think?
I've never heard it before. I wondered where I might look for this bird.
Don't bother. if it's the barred owl and you do a reasonable imitation of the barred owl...
Yeah.
Might come check you out. And okay. Not a bad thing.
Well, that sounds terrifying in the middle of the night, have the barred owls swoop in on you.
Not a bad thing. I mean, at least they'll be talking to you anyway. They'll answer your call. But they won't, you know, they'll keep their distance. But
Well, Pat, good luck. And go ahead.
If I don't hear him anymore, it means he's just moved on. Is that correct?
Well, or settled down. I mean, they're not in the business of making a lot of noise all the time. Mm. You know, when there's a purpose behind it, they're in there. And then they can dummy up for the rest of the season until springtime, and they start singing love songs.
All right, Pat, thanks for the call. Let's jump over to line two. And Jen and Bolton. Jen, you're on.
Hello there. So I live between two lakes. I live between Lake George and Trout Lake. And for half of the summer, I have been hearing this thing, which I can best describe as a loon laughing fast forward. yeah, it's kind of hard. Now, mourning doves, they only make the one noise. Yes?
Yes. Yes. Okay. They're cooing.
I would have thought it was a loon, except that it really sounds like it's going between the two lakes. And I know that loons are not consistent flyers.
So yeah, but they are. On that note, I'll jump right in here. Sorry to cut you off there, but loons do commute from lake to lake, and
daily.
Yeah, if they will find a lake that is productive and another lake that is comfortable for nesting, and they will go back and forth. Not all of them do. If they're content where they are, they'll stay where they are.
For several years now, we've had nesting loons on this lake. One family at this lake. It's a very small Trout Lake that I'm on. Mm-hmm. And we usually find the nest, and it's around there. But this is a call that I can't say I've ever heard. It's several tones, and I've never been able to really reenact it once. But as far as the speed goes, it's kind of like it's longer,
nice.
Nothing I've ever heard from a loon, but it's that low, smooth, kind of sultry loon dove kind of noise.
Yeah, very nice. And I'm going to stick with the loon story. And you know, they have quite a varied repertoire.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, that was my son's reenactment.
Tell him to come on the show next time.
Yeah, right. He can do it. And so I'm going to suggest that it's a loon commuting between lunch and dinner and home.
Huh.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But keep an ear out and prove me wrong. I'd love to hear more.
Yeah. Well, recently I haven't heard it as much, my windows have been closed. It's been colder. So.
Oh well. In that case, here's a thought. What I use is a baby monitor outside. Picks up the sounds of nature through the closed windows and doors.
Yes, that would be nice.
All right, surveillance. Hey, Jen, thanks a lot. We are done here, and Rich Guthrie, a splendid job, really.
Oh, wow, time flew like a bird.
It was almost like it was fun, right?
Terrific.
Well, maybe we'll do it again. You never know. Support comes from SUNY New Paltz Department of Theater, presenting In the Time of the Butterflies by Caridad Sevich and based on the novel by Julia Alvarez, October 3rd through 20th, newpaltz.edu/theater. The Vermont Sheep and Wool Festival, October 5th and 6th at the Tunbridge Fairgrounds, Tunbridge, Vermont. For more information, vtsheepandwoolfest.org. And River Valley Co-op, Northampton, Massachusetts, a food co-op featuring fresh local foods, a deli department with made-to-order sandwiches, a soup and salad bar, and a bakery, rivervalley.coop. Once again, thanks to Rich Guthrie for being here. Tremendous calls today. Well done, everybody. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Kayleen White answered the phones. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, astronomers Bob Berman and Valerie Rapson join us once again to answer your questions about the solar system and much more. That's tomorrow at 2. Right now, stand by for 51%.